Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Hi, and welcome to the show. Once again tonight, we are not in downtown St. Louis in the Lumiere Place Poker Room. Instead, we are bringing you more of our adventures at the 2009 World Series of Poker. And thank you, by the way, for all the great feedback via email to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com about the shows that we've been bringing to you here over the last month or so. Tonight, we're going to introduce you to Christy Gazes, one of the top women in the game of poker. Also, Joe McGowan, the poker coach, goes one-on-one with Chino Ream and Nick Schulman. We'll have another great story from Amarillo Slim. And also, you never know who you're going to meet at the poker table. I sat down at an event at the Venetian with Jose Canseco. We'll have all of that coming up for you in the next hour here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. By the way, the fact that we're not in St. Louis doesn't mean that you shouldn't go to Lumiere and play. It has become the premier poker room in St. Louis. They make more money with this poker room than any other poker room in town for a very good reason. Tony Russo and his gang have built a terrific operation here. Great dealers, great service, great fun, great bad beat jackpot. And one of the things that I like is you can get the waitress or the waiter to go get you food from one of Lumiere's many restaurants, which you'll hear about in just a second. So if you're in St. Louis, this is the destination to come to for poker, for blackjack, for craps, for roulette, for all the slot games, and lots more table games than you'll find anywhere else, too. It's called Lumiere Place, right in the heart of downtown St. Louis. Tonight's show is brought to you in part by Poker Stars. What do Dennis Phillips and Barry Greenstein and Chris Moneymaker and Greg Raymer and Joe Hashem and Daniel Negreanu and dozens more have in common? They all play online on PokerStars.net. That's the largest poker room in the world. And by the way, you don't just have to be a guy to be there. You might also run into Isabel Mercier or Vanessa Russo, who, by the way, is having a fantastic 2009 World Series of Poker. But when she's not playing here live, you'll find her online as well at PokerStars.net. It's free to download the software. It's easy to play online. PokerStars has been sending lots and lots of people out to Vegas for the main event, which starts up in just a week and a half. You can get there, too. Download that software and try it for yourself, PokerStars.net, and find the poker star in you. We're right back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table after this on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Whether you play poker in a home game, a cash game in a casino, or online, this is the show for you. It's the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to the Lumiere Place Final Table, not in St. Louis, but in Las Vegas, high atop the Rio in the Dennis Phillips Suite at the 2009 World Series of Poker. I'm Paul Harris with St. Louis's poker millionaire, Dennis Phillips, and we're joined now by poker pro Christy Gazes, although I guess I should temper that poker pro phraseology because not as much as she used to be. We'll talk about that with Christy here in a second. You've seen her on TV in the WPT Ladies Night, which she won in 2007. That is just one of 11 times she's cashed in WPT events. And she's here trying to get your first bracelet, right?
Yeah, my first bracelet. That would be nice.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful, that gold and diamond, fake diamond lame thing or whatever. I'll be wearing it every day if I win it.
I'm sure. Why not?
Yeah, gotta show it off, right?
Well, I got a couple of questions for you. I'd love to ask if I could. Obviously, as a woman playing, you know, certain stereotypes, people play at you. I'm sure of that. You have to earn the respect of the table and everything. If you play in an all-woman's event, How does that change your game then? Because that's got to change the way people play at you.
I've played in like a total of like four women's events, two in England and one on the WPT, the television, and last year or 2 years ago at the ladies. And it was interesting dynamic because it feels like there's a lot of newer players. So then you get the emotions of, and women naturally are more emotional, of course. So then when you beat them in a hand or something, they're, you know, the classic is like, I remember years ago at Binion's, I used to play like one in four, no ante, stud, high only.
Oh my
That's
gosh.
A game.
Yes.
And the lady, the old ladies used to get so mad. Like, they'd be, the smoking was allowed, of course, at Binion's. And you would, they would, they'd be nice to you. Hey, honey, did it? And you beat them in a pop, and they blow the smoke in you, in your face. Like, yeah, from zero to hero. Like, I thought we were friends. And so, like, in the ladies' tournament, it kind of feels like that sometimes. And then, of course, you get people, you know, girls. It's the same as men. Women who are ultra-competitive, because a lot of women that do play poker for a living or are trying to are the more competitive types. And one thing that I find interesting is a lot of women at the table sort of try to act like a man, which kind of doesn't – I think
–
I don't think that men
– What do they do?
In the sense that they – trying to yuck it up with the guys is one thing, but just they too aggressive or the language or in your face type attitude, because a man's just gonna laugh and like really want to beat you. Then it's for me, like, I like try to be nice to everyone and have fun. And when I play, I know that's a foreign concept. Fun, F-U-N. Look it up, Google it. And so for me, through trial and error, I mean, I was like a punk rock kid when I've been playing for a long time. So like for me, I was just this like degenerate kid playing poker. But now at the table, you know, if they're serious or jerks, whatever, I just try to have fun. They're all mannequins to me. I think if a lady's playing, that's how she should view it. It's very intimidating for women to come in poker, not as much as it was anymore, like years ago. But now, I mean, there's so many. There's a woman at every table. Just have fun and probably not best to use your sex a lot either. Just try to be sort of. Just a competitor rather than, you know, it's not good when the top's too low cut, and it's not good when the girl's too much like a dyke. Sorry. No offense to the dykes out there. I mean, because I like the dykes need loving too. I like the girls.
Okay, no problem. Okay. We got to be careful how you edit that. That could be real interesting there.
Sorry.
I'm not editing it.
All right, cool. Okay, then to go back to the basic question, because you know that people play against you different. If you're old, if you're young, if you're Asian, if you're whatever, everybody always stereotypes some people, and they really, really do it bad against women sometimes.
Absolutely.
I've seen this. I've got several friends at play in there. How do you counter that? How do you get away from it?
I just try to be in the moment. It's all about confidence. For me personally, I mean, I've been doing this for 18 years professionally. I mean, you know, knock on wood.
You started when you were four?
God bless you. I got to hang out here.
That was good. I actually was about to say something similar, and you beat me to it, damn you.
That was smooth. Yeah, I'm in my 40s, but thanks, guys. I started poker underage, actually, fake ID at the Commerce. We used to go play Pai Gow, and me and my friends at 18. And then my father, you know, taught me how to play poker. I knew about basic poker, and I started playing one and two literally all the way up, you know, grinding. Never thought I would be a professional poker player. Met a professional poker player, married him. He decided to become one after, you know, and then met another one, married him. They're gone now. Don't date professional poker players anymore. But, you know, how I counter it personally is
okay,
just...
Okay, I'm out. How about you?
Yeah.
Darn. All right, go ahead.
Sorry, guys. How I counter it is just, you know, you get a lot of weird energy, especially, you know, when you're playing with, you know, the random draw. And, you know, used to be, you know, I play primarily deep stack WPT one event a month. That's what I play. But at the series, I don't usually play these kind of tournaments. And it's just random draw. And sometimes, yeah, you get really competitive, cocky guys and punks trying to beat you. They know your ROI sucks online or whatever. They know, you know, they can look you up, whatever. I'm plus right now at the moment. So
that's good.
Yeah. ROI, yeah. I'm trying to, you know, and then you get the nice ones, just like anything else. Like you say, that, you know, sick Asian gambler, the knit, the deer tick, the, you know, crazy Persian guy, the drunk, you know, old lady, you know, it's just, they're all there. So I've been playing for so long and born and raised in Atlanta, playing at the Commerce, which is the circus land. So I'm kind of used to it at this point.
When you're playing at the table, do you talk a lot? Do you try to get social to get people off their game a little bit, or to bring them out or relax them so much that you can read their tells more easily?
I definitely am a social player. However, if people aren't talking back, I'll put on my earphones. I tend to wear my earphones more in no limit tournaments because, you know, I'm a spaz and I need to focus. So, like, if, you know, if you start talking to somebody, it's like, be careful, beware of the can of worms, because somebody might be like, have diarrhea of the mouth. Like, and then you have to like put your earphones on and be rude. It depends on where I'm at. Definitely in a cash game, I like to talk and have fun. That's my thing. As far as tells, sure. I mean, I'm not like a Daniel, like get people talking like that. They don't usually talk. And plus, I don't want to give anything away because, you know, I'm learning no limit myself. And, you know, what if some nerves come out of somewhere? So, you know, I'll talk if it's somebody I know, an old pro or But for me, you know, in the No Limit tournaments, I definitely try to have fun at my table. I love when I get another funny person or somebody I've known for a long time, and we can get it going. And then what I also like to do at No Limit tournaments, especially the big ones, is I always bring bubble gum, and I offer people bubble gum. And there's nothing more hilarious than when you offer a bunch of grown men, professional players with their sunglasses and earphones on, bubble gum, and then they're making these serious decisions for, you know, the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and everyone's blowing bubbles.
Yep.
And I just, it's like this little fun thing that I do.
So everybody at the table has the chewing tail.
Yeah, everybody, and they're blowing. And it's just hilarious. It's on you, sir. Hold on, the big bubble. It's like kind of makes it more. You know,
now we know what we got to give for prize at the final table this year in November. Give them all
bubble gum.
Yeah.
There you go.
Good idea.
Get Hubba Bubba on the phone. They should be one of the corporate sponsors of this thing.
There you go. I don't know if the casino floor will like it too much. But
now you were talking about not playing as much No Limit Hold'em because your nickname is Mixed Games.
Yeah.
And that's what you specialize in. Yeah. So does that mean you're going to be in the $50,000 horse and you're going to be playing those events, or what are you going to be doing?
I played that the first 2 years, and I got the same results, didn't cash in either. Late, deep in the second day, and the structure was, it got better the second year, but it felt like, you know, you just didn't have it, and there wasn't enough play. I passed on it last year because I was sick. This year, if I feel good in the morning, I'll play it. It's a big number. I only play, like, something that big, take it very seriously. I'm not going to just play because I can. I don't do that. That's not how I roll. I respect my money a little bit more than that because these things are very exhausting for me because I'm not used to doing them, and I really try to just go day by day. I'm missing the mixed events, unfortunately, tonight because I have a commitment tomorrow, which I didn't really look at the schedule, but I mean, I just play the ones I want to play in the morning. If it looks good and I feel good, I'll play it. I've played a couple of lottos so far, the 1500 No Limits, because I think...
Lottos?
Yeah, I call them the lottos.
I love
I got
the way
my ticket. And it's like, yeah. You know, I mean, I'll never forget one of the first in Commerce when Bill was playing tournaments, you know, my ex-husband Bill Gaze's. There was a $1 million guarantee. It was one of the first. And I walk in the room, and I'll never forget this in the rest of my life. Everyone's like, million. Like, everyone's just talking, million. That's how it reminds me when you go in the room, and you walk down the hall. I'm sure you've experienced this, Dennis. And the people are just talking about poker and the money.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just that insanity, you know. And that's what it feels like, that energy. It is like the lotto. Because you got, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, everyone. And it's wonderful. That's the great thing about the World Series. Everyone has a dream, and anyone could win. So it's really, you know.
Well, that's what the 1K stimulus special was all about.
Yeah.
6,021 people playing in that event over the weekend, and that's exactly what it was like. People who had the dollar signs in their eyes,
yeah,
and thought, I'm going to make $1 million today.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
And, you know, it is full value. It's better than sticking it in the slot. Sorry, Harris. Or, you know, the Keno machine. Like, I like to play the Keno machine when I'm here. But, I mean, yeah, if you're going to spend a dime, that's, the, you know, come on down. Like, and I didn't play a lot of them last year. I played two, I think, the year before. Three or something, but because I'm not used to the smaller stack. I like playing deep stack. But I need to learn. I'm trying to improve my game. I have a kid who's 22, who's an online. You know, he's been trying to teach me. Like I had one lesson with him. But I asked these kids, all these kids, and they used to be not like one or two at the table in the 25 dimer, 10 dimer, 15 dimer. Now there's more than half at the table.
Oh, yeah.
Look at the 40K results. 8 online pros, 2 live pros. So they know the game is different. It's changing. They know more than I do. So I'm trying to learn and improve, you know, when I do play. And I want to get my, you know, plus ROI online. I want to win online. So they're two different games, but they're merging now. And the young kids and online pros, young and old, have changed the game completely. The No Limit Hold'em specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so
they made a mess of changes this year in the WSOP. I mean, they 3X instead of 2X on a lot of them, which is great.
Yeah.
They got the 1K. They put in the 40K. I talked to Jeffrey, and he's loving it right now because, I mean, like, what, 916 in that first Omaha one was just blowing away everything.
Awesome.
They're just having a great time with it. And he says, well, we're probably going to have to bring in another one or two 1Ks. We're going to have some other things to do there on that. How did you like these changes? Do you got any new ones maybe we can add to it? What's your opinion?
I mean, I didn't play the 1K, but I love the triple stack. It feels like there's definitely more play than there is. I love the fact that they have so many mixed game events.
Yeah.
There's just a great variety now. The 40K to start, I probably would have put that maybe a little later, only because it's like I didn't play it, which I could have, but it's like the anti-free roll. It's like I'm going to go and get stuck 40. Let me do that on my own, not just in one. I want to do it like over a course of it. But, I mean, for me, like psychologically, that would be really bad. And I don't know. I know it's you're trying to have a splash, and it is, you know, World Series of Poker, and you know, but I think maybe the small event to begin with, the bang, you know, the crazy insane 6,000 as the first event, But I like the spread. It seems as though, of course, as the economy gets worse, vice goes up and gamble. And that's what, you know, it seems like the numbers are showing it. And I think it's great.
Yeah.
We've got a prop bet on. We had a prop bet on three different things out here. How many people would be in the 40K, how many would be in the 1K, and then how many would be in the main event. And so far we're 1-1 on this.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I told Dennis he could set the number and I would take the over-under.
Right.
Okay.
He set the number at 7,011.
Wow.
For the main event. Last year it was 6,844.
Right.
Wow, okay.
So what do you like, the over or the under?
I think I like the over. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, because at that time, you know, it's another month still, the money, you know, money's too tight to mention, but people go mad. I mean, they just gamble up. And it's funny because, you know, there used to be the, you know, for me, especially doing this so long, the idea of my mother, security and, you know, all the, and it's the greatest irony of all time for poker players I've been doing a long time. Because, you know, now there's no, you know, is there any stability to business? Is there, you know, corporations, get, you know, go to get your degree, get this job and this company will take care of you, old school. No, it's not like that. In fact, you know, these kids, people coming in, quitting great careers to become poor, everyone's a baller, everyone's a gambler now. And it's that kind of attitude. And it's
absolutely.
The street has gone, you know, like what I've done, like the back roads have come from. You know, in all circles, it's really, really the greatest irony. But it is kind of true. Why not gamble? I mean, life is a gamble, in my opinion. And
as a player who plays tournaments and cash games, which bad beat is harder to walk away from and remain calm? Walking away from a tournament where you know you're done for the day and it's over, or that bad beat in the cash game where maybe you don't get felted, but you go home and think to yourself, okay, that one hurt.
For me, the swings, because, you know, again, because of the longevity, it used to be painful more with cash, but the tournaments, to me, they've always made me feel like, you know, just hate myself, like this, like I suck at poker. That's what they make me feel like.
Yeah.
Like, if I lose a big session live, I'm like, whatever, I don't even remember who beats me. They're all random mannequins, they're the same. Slow boat to China, you're going to be here tomorrow, I'm going to get the money somehow. I'll have your house, I'll be in your bed with your wife. And, you know, I'm going to have everything slow, you know.
We're going to have to be careful how we edit this.
I like that. I was referring to that.
I am not editing out Christy in bed with your wife. Are you kidding me? Our ratings are skyrocketing.
But, I mean, you know, tournaments for me, no. I've left tournaments like a whiner. Like, I've walked through the Bellagio and been like, brutal. And I'm not a steamer. I don't throw chairs. I try to, you know, act appropriate when I play.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and then people wrote, oh, she wrote brutal like I'm whining. But it makes you, like, for me, I've cried for 2 hours after a tournament, like just like a girl, just been hysterical because I've gotten deep, but not the big W that, you know, I think I should be able to get one of these years.
Yeah.
So it's for me, it's all ego, of course. It's part of your ego because, you know, when you are successful at something in one area, but you still haven't quite conquered in the other, done well, but not as well as I think, you know. And it's just it's that flip of the coin. It's like in your face. It's kind of like a life, death, and feeling death over and over again. It really is. For me, much tougher in tournaments.
When you're talking about bad beats, are there some that even from years ago stick with you? I mean, can you remember a bad beat that knocked you out of a major tournament 4 years ago, or do you have the erase button for the past?
I pretty much have the erase button. It wasn't always like that at this point, although I did misread a hand on TV, like one of the biggest tournament NBC of my life, and I, you know, I hadn't slept in 40 hours long, blah, 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 yeah, whatever, but it was from exhaustion. But because it is, you know, in celluloid, it's forever, people can just watch it and comment on it, like, which I don't look at that the things written about me, because that's, you got to hate yourself if you do that. I mean, because it's not real. Fame isn't real. Television, it's just, you know, I'm not an actress. I don't really care. I used to look at the stuff. I don't look at it anymore.
That is poker pro Christy Gazes joining us here in the Dennis Phillips suite at the Lumiere Place final table. We'll take a break. When we come back, the poker coach Joe McGowan will join us. And later on, you'll hear from Chino Ream and Nick Schulman and yet another story from Amarillo Slim. All ahead here on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
In just 2 short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right
right now. Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with two-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Now, taking you from the flop to the river, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking poker at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And we are in the Dennis Phillips Suite high atop Las Vegas on the 21st floor of the Rio All Suite Hotel, the home of the 2009 World Series of Poker. And we're joined now by the poker coach, Joe McGowan, who, I don't know if you know this, Dennis, but Joe and I the other night went and played in the single table satellites room here, the Brasilia room as it's called, where you can play single table satellites of $125 all the way up to the $1,030. At the top of that scale, if you win your table, you get a seat into the main event. But they're all for pretty much cash. You get tournament chips if you win them, in addition to a little bit of cash, and everybody's trading and selling tournament chips all around town.
I love those things, but it's such a wide variety. Again, that's where, Joe, you ought to do excellent at that, because you can sit down with three or four pros. You can sit down with three or four grandmothers. You can sit down with three or four people that's their first trip to Vegas. You never know what level of player you have there.
Well, we sat down together in a $275 buy-in single table satellite, and it became quickly apparent to both of us that we were the best players at the table. And fairly quickly, we became like Matt Damon and Edward Norton in Rounders. There was no collusion, and we weren't sending signals and any of that sort of stuff. It was just a matter of kind of running the table. Although I think in this situation, this scenario, Joe, I may have been Worm. I don't know. Anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about playing, whether it's in an event like that, a single table satellite, or the bigger events, the 1K, the 2K, the 5K, all the way up to the 10K. I wanted to talk a little bit today about how you know how much to bet, particularly in comparison to how much you have in front of you and how much other people have in front of you. What's a good raise? How much of your chip stack should you be putting at risk at any one point?
Yeah,
can you address that?
Of course. You know, if you're playing on a smaller thing like a single table satellite, 275, you're probably going to get like 1,500 in chips. The blind levels go up really quick. The whole thing's going to be over in 2.5 hours. So you can look at it two ways. Kind of play it quick and try to chip up, which is not my first choice. But you also want to be careful playing the 6-8 suited, the 5-7s, and you start siphoning off chips. You know, and before you know it, you're 1,500, you're down to 900. If you don't hit any flops, and now you're short because the blinds went up. So it really does depend. If you're playing in the 10K, you know, the main event, this year you start with 30,000 chips, you might wait an hour and a half before you play one hand, before you even limp in, because you're trying to establish maybe a tight image, and then you can bluff more later. So it does very much depend upon what you're playing in and how many chips you have. Certainly a cash game, you have an endless amount of chips typically, you know, because you can dig back into your pocket. But I think, you know, some stuff that helps, I think you always want to try to find the right size bet. And in general, for making the right size bet, it really varies. And I think the normal thing is, in today's poker, is about half the pot to the full pot. So for people that are maybe new, try to stay in that range. It's a very, very common mistake of a real beginner. You know, might have a $10,000 in the pot in some tournament, and they bet, you know, 500, you know, on the turn. I mean, really, it's funny, but you see that, right,
you
Dennis?
Absolutely do.
It doesn't happen often, but it happens when a beginner's in there that goes deep. They're a little bit fish out of water. They bet 500, and the guy with the big draw is like, oh, great. You know, 500, I call.
Yep.
Bingo, right on the river, and they got to see it for $500 and got a great price.
Yep.
And then complain about the guy staying in with that horrible hand.
Right.
You're the one that invited him to stay. You literally invited him to stay.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that case, you know, I like to give them a bad price to call if I'm putting them on the draw and I have the made hand. I want to give them a bad price. So you might do some quick math of what the odds are. You really put them on the flush draw and you think that's all that they have. There's one card to come. A lot of people, you know, they'll lay down a flush draw with one card to come as opposed to two because they have the two chances. So it's a little easier to move them off their hand. But you want to make them pay to draw out on you, and you want to build the pot and also get information. But I think also say you're in a game and it's $50 to go and you get two callers, so there's only $150 in the pot, and you're one of the three, of course, and you flop bottom set. The texture of the board, if the flop is a draw-heavy board, if it comes, you know, 10, jack, 4 with two hearts.
By draw-heavy, you mean there's two suited out there, or there's connected cards,
right,
or there's something, so that people have a lot of chances to making a straight, a flush,
right,
or something like that. Right.
It's a very dangerous board. A lot of hands and a lot of areas could beat you that these two opponents might have.
Yeah.
You flopped a great hand. You flop bottom set. I mean, you got to be pretty much way ahead, except for that once every 6 months horrible situation, set over set. It just doesn't happen that often. If it does, usually you can't get away from it anyway. But you got to feel that you're ahead and you want to build the pot and get some information. That's a spot where you actually might bet 300. Now, you don't want to give away your hand. You can never be predictable. But to me, if the normal person has a jack and has queen jack and a backdoor type straight draw, they have top pair. And if you're sitting there, you know, and it's the $10,000 main event, you have $30,000 in chips, it's in the first level, you can build that pot pretty quick with that bottom set. You can bet twice the pot because it's a tiny, tiny bet still. It's only 300, and most players will call. If they have nothing, they're going to throw it away. They'll call you with just a jack because it's only 300. So you can actually go against the rule a little bit. You could go against the rule, like I said, with the draw-heavy board where they have the flush draw, and you're trying to make them have the bad price. I remember a hand that I was involved with Chino Ream at the 5 Diamond, the 15K, and his good friend Michael Mizrachi was watching him play, and it was at my table. It was deep into it. I think there was, I don't know, 15 players left or so. And there was a raise and a re-raise and a call. Flop came 3-7 king. Not a draw-heavy board. There was no, you know, four to the flush, you know, two flush suits out there. There's no straight draw out there. And by the way the betting went, it ended up where his opponent was all in. And Chino had a lot of money in there.
On the flop?
On the flop. And Chino goes into the tank. And he's kind of sitting there, and if anybody remembers Chino from the main event with you, Dennis, and, you know, he's had a lot of success, and certainly that event he went on to win at the 5 Diamond. He really went in the tank, and he likes to talk, and, you know, you're only one to a hand, but he says, hey, Michael would know what to do. The grinder would know what to do here, and he's sitting there, and it's kind of cool.
Was Michael Mizrachi there?
Michael Mizrachi was there, sweating Chino right on the rail.
He's on the rail, not at the table.
Not at the table. He's standing right behind us, and, of course, Michael just smiles and turns away. He doesn't want to be involved in anything, you know, that could be even perceived as, you know, wrong.
Sure.
And eventually Chino folded, and as it turned out, they each had the same hand. They each had ace-king. And talking privately afterwards, you know, Michael felt he would have called because, you know, if he flopped a set of sevens with that board, he wouldn't have re-raised all in. He would have tried to extract more money. That was his logic at the time, which I thought was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chino's fold was also very good. Chino probably felt, you know, he's probably the best player there at the table perhaps, and it wasn't, you know, a situation where you wanted to go broke with one pair. So I thought the fold was very good. But the texture of the flop, that's something people really need to pay attention to really answer your ultimate question, was the chips and how much to bet. So in general, it's half the pot to full pot, but you can definitely vary, but you'd never want to be predictable. You don't want to be that guy that, you know, pre-flop, you make a huge raise, he must have pocket nines, he doesn't want to be called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can never be obvious, and you do always have to mix it up. So stay in the general guidelines, but know when you got to put a little more heat on it, and know when maybe you actually want to check to try to, you know, do whatever it is that you want to do.
But you're not saying pick a number between 50 and 100% of the pot and always bet that amount. So sometimes you might bet 60% of the pot. Sometimes you might bet 80% of the pot.
Correct.
Actually, you can do it one of two ways. You can vary your bet on that, or you can be consistent, whereas if you flop a set or you flop pure air, you're still making the same bet afterwards, so you don't have any tells on that. It depends on your table and how you want to do it. You can also do the variance like Joe says, you know, when a little bit heavier when you want to encourage, you know. You can play it either way. But don't go into it and say, every time I do this for the next 2 months in a tournament, I'm going to bet 65% of the pot. No.
Right, definitely. I totally agree.
All right, let me ask you, though, one thing about the Chino hand. Is the guy he's against a pro who's pretty good?
I would have to classify him as someone that just happened to run deep that I don't think anybody knew who he was.
Okay, well, let's say you're playing against a good player, somebody of your caliber, Chino's caliber, Dennis's caliber, and they're sitting there at the table, and they make a move like that, and you think to yourself, well, he wouldn't have moved all in if he had a set. He would try to extract things. Isn't the
next level of poker to do exactly that, to move all in, hoping that the other guy thinks, well, he wouldn't move in with a set when you actually do have the set?
Right. Well, you know, hey, Paul, that is the fun of poker and trying to figure out all the mind games, and that's where you use the
tells. I find the fun
tells.
Of poker is having chips pushed towards me. That's the fun of poker. But you're right. There's that mental fun.
Right.
Well, this is an interesting hand, though, because obviously there was a bet preflop. I know we're getting shorthanded at the table and all this other stuff. Well, actually, it would have been 7 or 8 at the table on that. But, I mean, what else are you going to put him on? King 7? King 3?
Right. Which is exactly right. There's no
two
pair.
There's no other. There's nothing.
Right. There's no two pair. There's no flush draw.
No.
There's no straight draw. So he's not going to do that also with King Queen. So for Chino's defense, this guy's not going to do this with King Queen. He wouldn't have done that pre-flop. He could have done it with Kings, and that's the case King. Maybe he got a little frisky with 7s and got lucky. You know, 3s don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of weird. Jeez, maybe this is a stone bluff. You know, maybe the guy's got queens and went crazy. But that's unlikely, too.
I'm telling you, the only hand I could put him on that would beat me on that thing actually would be pocket 3s on that thing. And he flopped the third set on it. And he really thinks nobody's going to think I'm pushing in. I've probably got the best hand. I'm not sure I even want to call, though, because he didn't know what Chino's got. Chino could have queens, could have who knows what for sure then.
I think there was some heavy action, though, pre-flop, and I apologize.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember exactly, but I know it was raised and I think re-raised and called.
Oh, well, then.
If it's 3-bet or 4-bet, you don't put the guy on 3s.
No, you don't. And definitely the two pairs is 100% out. You can't even – there's nothing else. There's no gut shots. There's no nothing. So.
Although I did at the Bellagio see a guy pushing his entire stack against the big stack at the table. This is in a cash game, and we're talking about a big amount of money where the other guy obviously had aces. The other 7 people at the table knew 100% sure that the big stack had aces. This guy called him down for his entire stack with 2 black 6s.
You know, sometimes, Paul...
Can you introduce him to me?
Sometimes these players, they'll go broke with pocket 5s, pocket 6s, small pocket pairs. I put you on ace king. It's a race. I know it's a race.
Right.
I call, and they have pocket 5s. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's great. But it's bad when you do have ace king. The 5s hold up, and you're the one that's out of the tournament.
Yeah, but if you're 5 betting with ace king in that situation to put the other guy all in, I think you're sending a signal that, you know what, you don't want to race against me.
Anytime you're in Las Vegas, you're going to have people from all over the world.
Right,
and you're
that's
gonna have
true.
All different types of players. And, you know, it's a little bit of a thrill sometimes to play with such a wide range of players. You know, you get 2 of the youngest superstar internet kids, and, you know, you get the local rounder that's whatever age, and you get the 2 local ring pros trying to make a living in the game, and the 1 guy that's just wealthy coming to have some fun. And part of the fun of poker is figuring all that out and what's the best play.
Well, that's why I love the sit and goes because, again, you get such a wide variety and it tests you almost immediately because you will have everybody from 20 to 70 sitting down there and playing all sorts of all different levels, everything like that.
I'm curious about your experiences in the WSOP events thus far. I mean, we're only a week and a half into the World Series of Poker now, and you guys have played a few events, not every single one of them. But most of them are open events where it could be 6,000, as we had in the 1K, or 1,000 or 1,500, as they're getting in some of the others. How often have you sat down at the table here and not known anyone, either by sight or reputation, who was sitting at that table?
Actually, a couple of times already.
Yeah.
In the smaller events.
But that's because there are so many people there, right?
Absolutely. On it. So, and again, you have to do an instant analysis of the table and try and figure it out because you haven't seen these people. You don't know them from Adam.
Yeah.
In fact, until they start speaking, you don't even know what country they're from. So, yeah, it's interesting, to say the least.
I sat down on the six-handed event. I think it was 2,000, six-handed. The other 5 players were all under 23 years old.
Wow.
The 5 guys that I played against. To be honest, I was kind of jealous. I'm like, man, I want to go back in a time capsule and hang out with these guys. You know, there's like 5 of them in a house, and they're renting, and their other buddy's doing this and that, and they're having a blast.
The very same event. I'm sitting just a couple of tables from Joe, and I have 3 people older than me, and I'm old as can be anyhow already. Mm-hmm. I have 3 people older than me there. We have lots of gray hair at our table.
Yeah.
So, you know, totally different. Just luck of the draw.
I'm not sure lots of hair of any kind would apply to you, but. That's another bald guy talking.
I did not talk about my scalp. All right.
We'll take a break and we'll come back. More from the 2009 World Series of Poker as the Lumiere Plays Final Table continues. You're on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watches. This is the watch that I wear, guys. If you see me on the final table, I guarantee on my wrist will be a Reactor Watch on that. They have, right now, a huge, huge display over here at the Venetian Casino. It's a nationwide showing of all the premier jewelry watches that you can find. Theirs is a blowaway display. You ought to go over there. It's all sorts of styles, men's, women's, whatever it is, a huge display, and they'll do it. They are known for their durability. They're known for their reliability. On that rare occasion, too, when one of their watches has a problem, they will repair it ASAP. It's not one of these 6-8 weeks you did the watch you mailed off and you never see it back. This is the watch that is worn by pro athletes all around everywhere. Albert wears one. I can name you a dozen more. Reactor Watches, an awesome watch. I love it. I wear it all the time on that thing. Reactor Watches. Happy to have them as sponsor of the Lumiere Place Final Table.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Paul Harris and St. Louis's own poker millionaire, Dennis Phillips, on 590 The Fan KFNS.
All right, time now for another edition of Poker Coach One-on-One. This is a new segment we debuted last week in which Joe, the poker coach McGowan, is playing in an event and finds himself at a table with a poker pro that he wants to talk to for the show. Tonight he talks with David Chino Ream. You remember Chino from the final table with Dennis Phillips at the November 9 at the 2008 World Series of Poker. The month after that, Chino went on to win the Five Diamond event, where Joe also had a nice deep run, and now they find themselves back together again in the Amazon room here at the Rio.
Chino, we're playing together in the World Series of Poker, a 2K event, No Limit Hold'em. You come to my table with a massive chip stack, definitely one of the chip leaders in the event. We're down to under 100 players, fairly well into the money, and you get involved in a hand that I have to say is probably the wildest, craziest hand that possibly I've ever seen in any cash game, TV, or anything. Tell me a little bit about the hand and what happened.
I just got moved to the table, and the gentleman to my right that actually raised the hand and won the pot, he was on the button. He was on my table all day also, so I know how he plays. He's kind of a tight player. He raised the button with Queen 10 offsuit. I have a lot of chips. I play a lot of pots, obviously. I flat called from the small blind with 9-10 offsuit, and the big blind called also. The flop came Jack-7-5 rainbow, so I flopped a gut shot. I needed an 8 for the nuts. I had around 200,000 or a little less to start the hand. And I think the pot was maybe like 20,000 total. I bet 9,000 on the flop with the gut shot. The big blind called with the double gut shot, and the gentleman who had raised the button called with Queen-10 high. The turn came a jack, which was a good card for me because... you know, if anyone has a jack, I don't think, like, the hand would have been played that way. So the turn was a great card. Like, I represented the jack, so the turn was a jack. I fired 18,000. The big blind folded, and the gentleman on the button had 13,000 more, including my 18,000, and went all in with Queen 10 high. I thought about it. I was pretty disgusted, obviously, when he went all in. I obviously knew I was beat. I mean, I only have 10 high, but... the range of hands that I put him on was like, you know, queen jack, jack 10, king jack, ace jack, something. I thought he had a jack. I thought he had three jacks. And I needed an 8, but I had put in so much money, it's only 13,000 more to call. I'm getting like 10 to 1 on my money to hit an 8 with...
It was pretty close to make the call. Initially, it's feeling like, because you kind of told about what you had in your hand, and... it felt like, oh, it's a bad price, and then you start adding up the pot. It really wasn't that bad.
No,
it
the was price was actually close. the price was okay for me. Right. Call it's 13,000. I already put in like 30,000, and the pot's already like 100,000. So it's like.
But nonetheless, you feel like I'm absolutely dead here.
I'm absolutely
I'm
crushed.
Only
I mean,
possibly
like
possibly in the world,
like
alive
to an 8. To an correct. 8. Correct. So I mean, I called the 13,000 more, trying to get lucky in this hand.
And this player looks like tightest player in the world.
Right, he has an image looking like the tightest player in the world. And I called and he flipped over Queen 10 high, which obviously had me beat because I had 9-10 high, but...
and the gross part...
The gross part was that, you know, he won the hand, no.
And but, a 10 comes.
And
if
a 10 comes.
If you would have had 8-9, which
right.
a lot of us felt you had.
Right, if I had 8-9, I would have won. But the thing is... the way he explained it after was, I play so tight that I thought I could get you to fold for 13,000, which is like, not to knock the gentleman, like, he seems like a fairly nice guy, but it's just the worst, For if you ask any other poker player, it's a real bad play because it's like, even if you have a tight image, like anyone who puts that much money in the pot, there's no fold value there. There's no fold equity in the hand, and it's just like, you know, either you have it or you don't. It's like, you know, what he did was, you know, not to say harsh words, was pretty dumb.
Right.
And it, like 9 out of 10 times, knowing that he has queen 10, I'm definitely supposed to win that pot right there on the turn. He's supposed to actually on the turn. He's supposed to fold the flop. I mean, I'm supposed to win the pot on the turn versus the big blind who had 8-9. So, I mean, it turns out he had the best hand and he won, and it was just it's a pretty crazy hand. Like I, you know, I've never been involved in a pot or a hand like that where the player went all in with no fold value and flipped over a hand that could have easily completely been beated. Like, I could have been bluffing the pot with ace high. And
I had felt, as one of the players, we're down the other end of the table, me and the other players that are, you know, talking while the hand's going on quietly, certainly not trying to interrupt the hand in any way, because the hand took a while. I thought there was a possibility maybe he saw your cards.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you and I started talking about it. You're like, of course he could have maybe seen my cards. How could he have possibly made this call?
Right. But
then we thought that, you know, the other person in the big blind had also called, and then he overcalled. So from the flop, there's no way he saw both of your cards.
Right.
And then he says, well, guys, look, at honestly, everyone at the table is talking at such a level that's so far beyond me, and I'm a rookie, I really didn't know what I was doing. And,
right.
And to me, that probably
that
has
makes
to
sense.
Be what it
I
is.
I mean, as sad as that might sound, like, it really makes sense. The guy actually didn't know what he's doing and thought that he can get me off any type of hand besides a jack.
Right.
For 13,000 more.
And it's funny, you know, the 8 doesn't come and he has king jack, it goes away and no one thinks of anything.
Right.
But because he wins with basically the queen high, you
right.
know, a 10
right.
comes, but it was just, like I said, the craziest hand truly that I think I've ever seen with the most surprising kind of result when he turned that hand over.
Right. I mean, I
was
dumbfounded when I saw him flip over queen 10 high.
Like. And most of the players at the table were saying the same thing, that of all the hands I've ever seen, that might have been the craziest thing I've ever seen
hand.
In a live action. You know, internet, sometimes you see some nutty stuff. But no one said that. They all felt it was the nuttiest thing they've ever
right.
seen.
Right. I completely agree.
Listen, I think you're playing well. You know,
I'm splashing too much right now. But
that's all right. We got a little dinner break to regroup.
Yep.
And hopefully we both come back and end up at the final table yet again. Although I want a different result from our last final table at the Five Diamond, which you went on to win. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And you're playing great. Keep it up. Good to see you, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you.
And while we're putting Joe to work in the Amazon room, let's have him amble over to the area where Jeffrey Pollack, the commissioner of poker, has been handing out the bracelets every day. This year, they don't just do it at the end of the event. They wait until 2 o'clock the next afternoon and do it in front of everybody. And like at the Olympics, they raise the flag and play the national anthem of the person who wins the bracelet that day. Well, here's Joe with a guy by the name of Nick Shulman just after he steps down from receiving his bracelet.
I'm here with Nick Shulman, Deuce to Seven champion, world champion, 10K event. Nick, you actually seem a little calm. You're fresh off of the podium with your brand new World Series bracelet. How do you feel?
I feel great. I feel rewarding, but I feel a little more comfortable at a poker table than standing on a stage, so... You know, I'm relieved to be off the podium, have the bracelet, and move on to the next tournament.
You know, I don't play Deuce to Seven, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't play Deuce to Seven. What are some of the major differences? You're extremely accomplished in No Limit. What are some of the major differences from No Limit to Deuce to Seven, and what are some of the things that maybe you're able to use from No Limit that help you?
Well, I think it's just being a big bet game, you know, understanding bet sizing and pot control still applies, but it's a game that you can learn in a day. I mean, you really can. And as far as making good decisions, that probably takes a lifetime. And I think if I played with those same guys every day for the next year, I might not come out ahead, but I just was lucky enough to come out ahead for those 3 days. But it's a game with a lot of physical tells, which is probably the most important in that game of any other game, because You're kind of saying either have it or you don't, you know. And No Limit, you can have a big hand. You could be value betting. You could be totally bluffing. So a lot of times it makes people harder to read. But in Deuce to Seven, it's I mean, there are obviously value bets also, but it's pretty clear he's either got it or he doesn't in a lot of situations. And you know, sometimes you can just look at a person and decide.
Now, your final hand, you actually made a wheel.
I did.
And that is the nuts in this game.
It is.
Was it a struggle to get the money in? Was there any strategy for you in that hand? Walk me through that hand a little bit and tell me about that, if you would.
No, I had a 2-to-1 chip lead, and I raised it pre-flop. He re-raised, and I called with a draw. I could have moved it in, but I decided to call it.
Did you call because you felt he was strong and it would be like a semi-bluff opportunity? You really don't want him, you know, you don't want to put yourself at risk at that point?
Believe it or not, my read was actually incorrect, but I thought that he was going to stay pat, and I thought he was snowing, and I thought I was going to draw one. And if I made, you know, any of like 20 cards that I had to catch, I was going to call and pick them off. And I thought there was a reasonable chance that he would bet half the pot, and I might have even moved it in, bluffing. But then it turns out he drew one, and I drew one as well, and made the wheel. So
beautiful. Well, Nick, you're a great guy, a great No Limit player. You're cemented in history forever. It's got to feel great. You're one of the good guys. Congratulations, and thanks a bunch.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's our Poker Coach one-on-one segment for tonight here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. A quick plug for our website, which is thechipleader.com. That's where you can go to find all the podcasts of these shows, including any you've missed over the last 4 or 5 months, and all of the ones we've been doing here from the World Series of Poker. We'd also love to get your feedback. Our Gmail address is dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. Send us comments on what you're hearing, questions you have for Dennis or Joe or for me or any of the poker pros that we're talking to, or about what the WSOP 2009 experience is like. That's dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. This is 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
It's Poker on Your Radio. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS. Now, here are two guys giving off reverse tells and trying to take your stack. Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris.
As we've told you, you never know who you're going to sit down with at a table here at the World Series of Poker, which is why I wasn't surprised to find Jose Canseco come and sit 3 seats to my right in a deep stack event at the Venetian. On a break, we had a chance to talk right after I had given him a few chips.
And you've been talking about some of your pet peeves at the table, some of the things you hate to hear other people say. Give me a couple of examples.
Well, the funniest one, the one that really makes me laugh all the time, is when someone says, "I'm folding the winner."
Yeah.
It's like, I thought you were supposed to play the winner in this game.
Yeah.
And then people ask you, well, can you beat tens? Can you beat jacks? Like, you're actually going to get a real answer. So it's just the funniest, most horrendous thing I've ever heard. You know, "I'm folding the winner to you." Then you shouldn't come out here and play poker. You don't have to play the game. You're supposed to play the winners.
How long have you been playing poker? Does it go back to your when you were a kid?
Yeah, like at least, 25 years around there. And obviously I played a lot in baseball and the flights and so forth. Played before that. I think everybody's played poker. Everyone can play poker because there's really no type of handicaps out here. You know, everyone starts out with a certain amount of chips. Everyone has the same ability to, you know, fold, check, or raise or push all in. So it's a great game for everyone.
Tell me about poker in the locker room in your playing days. Who'd you play with?
We used to play with Reggie Jackson and basically all the players on the flights, and be amazing how the money, you know, switches from, you know, going to a city and coming back home. It's just amazing.
Who was the fish?
At any point, anyone was. Whoever caught that run just got lucky. You know, this game's very simple. If you start off with a good hand, you have a good chance, and if you hit your cards, you're going to win. It's that simple.
You playing the main event this year?
Yeah, most likely we'll be playing the main event.
Have you done that the last couple of years?
Done the last couple of years. Got some really bad beats. Haven't lasted long, but it's a lot of fun.
And you were saying before that you don't actually like playing deep stack events like this. You're only doing it for your girlfriend's sake.
Yeah, I mean, she loves to play. She's probably a better player than I am, has more patience. You see me, I'm more an aggressive type player. Because I'm aggressive, I do get a lot of cards hit on me. But I come here to play and have fun. And you got to do the math. By a certain time of the actual day, if you're 5-6 hours into it, if you're not at a certain chip stack, you're not going to win anyways.
You don't want to sit around for 14 or 15 hours and get and make no money, right?
No, it's like I was saying, the next 4 or 5 hours, if I'm not, you know, top two or three or five in chip lead, I'm gone.
Well, I probably helped you out there, or I doubled you up.
Thank you very much. I almost didn't call it. I thought you had a better king than me, but I said, what the hell? I'm a gambler. I got top pair.
Yeah. Well, nice hand. And thanks for doing this. I appreciate
it. Great. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. To finish up the show tonight, we've got another segment with Amarillo Slim Preston. This is part of an hour-long interview we did with him a few weeks ago here at the Dennis Phillips Suite at the 2009 World Series of Poker. And we promised we would cut it up and bring you individual stories from Slim as the summer goes along. Here's the one about Slim, the ping pong player, and the Coke bottles.
Well, the ping pong thing, let me tell you, that guy, Bobby Riggs, he spent a lot of time and effort to beat me out of something. $3, wouldn't have mattered. He just wanted to win.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew he was a pro tennis player, and he won Wimbledon once, you know. And then I had the misfortune after I jacked him around on them frying pans of going with him to down there to beat Mary Billie Jean at Houston, and I bet as much money as a show dug could jump over on that match down there in Houston. And
who'd you take?
I took the winner.
Need you ask?
Well, but see, you wouldn't tell it if you took the loser. I guess. So I'd just be part of it. But anyway, and that come about back, because then I'm out at Channel 4 there. I got a buddy that's the one of the directors of TV there in Amarillo. And he and I are drinking a Coke. That's just as natural as anything in the world. And he and I had been playing some ping pong. So in a minute, I just pitched the ball up in there, and boom, I hit it with that Coke bottle. It's a miracle, because there's about a 16th of an inch there is the only area you can hit.
Mm-hmm.
A little lower, it goes straight down. A little higher, it goes straight up. You understand?
Yep.
So Wendell said, do you know what you just did? I hit that tennis ball back over there at the table.
Yeah.
He says, you couldn't do it again in 100 tries. So me and him met a cup of coffee. He's a little short. And I told him to get him a ladder. But anyway, I found out with a lot of practice and patience that I could hit a ping pong ball with a Coca-Cola bottle. So I'm in Memphis, Tennessee. I was back there playing the world champion checker player. And there's rumors I play checkers and a lot of other games.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, a guy that I barely knew, I knew who he was. And I was playing as checker champion. And he come over and he said, Slim, could you beat everybody in this room playing ping pong? So I don't wake anybody. I said, well, yeah, like I said. And I said, I can carry you piggyback and beat everybody in here.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched where they went, and they went over, and there's one of them Orientals. And I knocked it off like a dead limb. I knew what was happening. So I said, well, yeah, but I said, now, I knew they knew about my deal with Riggs. So they assumed incorrectly that frying pans was going to be our paddles. Now, this guy was a champion ping pong player from Taiwan. So now I said, looky here, I'm fixing to doctor me some folks. So he said, what's the deal about the paddles? I said, well, we'll both use the same paddle, but I get to choose the paddles. Now, they've got to assume, which they did, that it's with a frying pan, because mm-hmm. that's what I beat Riggs with.
Mm-hmm.
I did a documentary not long ago and played some with a frying pan and could still do it. Now, can you imagine an 80-year-old son of a bitch could hit a golf ball, a ping pong ball with a skillet? But anyway, so I practiced for about 4 or 5 months playing with a Coke bottle. Got to where occasionally I could hit it, you understand? So when I go down there, I said, I can't play right now, man. It'll take me a couple of weeks to get finished business at home. All I did was go back and sharpen up on hitting that bottle. And I know they're practicing every day with a frying pan, but that's the wrong paddle. That's the wrong paddle. Now, when I handed him that Coca-Cola, you could have played Gin Rummy on his shirt tail. It's sticking right straight out. He took it on the heel and toe, and I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is not 20 years from now. We got to get this over.
Uh-huh.
So he told these guys in pretty good English, said, I don't know savvy about a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't nothing he could do. I got to choose a bottle, so I set two Coke bottles out there, and he took one, and I took the other one, and he said, we always ping for serve. I said, well, you're going to get it anyway. I said, why don't you just take the serve? He didn't. He hadn't hit it over the net yet. It's love five when I pick it up. You follow me?
Yep.
So I felt it was good for him because there was a lot of people flew in up there to bet on that match because they knew this guy was a champion.
Yeah.
Well, hell, I did too. I knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
So anything that comes up on the natural generally works. Generally works.
This portion of tonight's show is brought to you by the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance. They're here at the WSOP 2009, signing up people from all over the world to fight for the rights of poker players both online and offline. Poker players just like you. And you don't have to be here in Las Vegas to join the PPA. All you have to do is go to their website, ppa.org, pokerplayersalliance.org. We've got lots of people here who've been walking up to Brian Spadaro from the PPA and saying, I want to join. I want to help convince Congress to go along with Barney Frank's bill that will be introduced later on this summer. Help make poker legal everywhere in every form in the United States. It can only happen through lobbying action for which the PPA needs help. And they need members like you. Just $20 to join. Go to the website ppa.org and become a poker playing member of the Poker Players Alliance, one of the proud sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table here on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. We'll see you next Tuesday night with more from Las Vegas and from St. Louis. And don't forget, you can download our podcasts on thechipleader.com.